Hello, Namibia, from the golden dunes of Walvisby to the heartbeat of Windhoek, from the lush greens of Zambezi to the ripe edges of Kunene. A very good afternoon to you, wherever you're tuning in from. I'm your staff, Happy Juju, and I will be the one keeping you company from now up until 14:30, right here on Eagle FM. Now, it's Wednesday, the 8th of October, 2025, midweek, the turning point where momentum builds and reflection begins, pardon me. Now, Wednesdays carry that gentle reminder that you've made it halfway, that there's strength in your stride, and that the weekend's promise is just around the corner. So whether you're pushing through your to-do list, chasing a new goal, or simply catching your breath, take a moment to pause, smile, and keep your rhythm steady. This is On The Reader News Analysis, the show where we don't just skip the headlines, we unpack Namibia's stories, connect them to real people, and explore the moments shaping our nation's heartbeat. And remember, your voice makes this conversation whole. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or WhatsApp, or connect through the Eagle FM website and Eagle FM app, because here, your thoughts don't just matter, they move the story forward. So whether you're in the office, driving through the city, or relaxing at home with your mead with tea, thank you for choosing Eagle FM as a companion this Wednesday afternoon. Stay tuned, this is On The Reader. Namibia's stories explored, unpacked, and brought home right before you. Now let's jump straight into today's top stories. The Kavango East and Kavango West regions continue to record alarming numbers of deaths linked to crocodile and hippo attacks, as well as drowning incidences along the Kavango River. Now, according to recent reports, at least 5 people have been killed and 6 others injured in crocodile attacks between January 2024 and February 2025. The attacks mostly occurred when residents go to the river to fetch water, bath, or do fishing. Now, of course, I'm joined by Eagle FM's reporter, journalist, Anakleta Haikara. Anakleta, very good afternoon to you. Welcome to On The Reader News Analysis.
Good afternoon, listeners. I just want to take this moment and say it's summer and it's very hot, and I know everybody right now is just whether sitting in their offices or just trying to get where their body can be cooled off. Mm. But yeah, you know, it's not easy in every region, especially when it comes to the Kavango West and East. Mm. Well, we know when it's summer, a lot of people will always want to go to the river. And also at the same time, the rivers are very dangerous. So we residents, the people that live in the region or in these areas are really, really concerned about a lot of safety for the people. But we know it's summer and everybody really wants to go to the river.
Mm, that's the thing. And of course, now, recently, a heartbreaking tragedy has struck the Mukwe constituency in the Kavango East region on Monday, of which an 8-month-old baby has been killed in a crocodile attack, and the mother was injured. Anakleta, also get into this as we just build momentum to speak about, you know, things that we could maybe do, or what the people could do to avoid this, and what maybe those in the offices that are entitled, that are supposed to handle such things, can do. Kindly tell us more about this incident.
Recently, it was reported that the lady and 6 others went to the river where they went to wash their clothes. It's actually a normal thing here in the Kavango region where people but more commonly, because this is a natural resource, right? And you can't take away these people's pride. They feel the river is their only source of income, although at the same time, something that they can go to without paying, and something they can go to feeling free and willingly do whatever they want.
Yeah.
So the lady, in a company of her friends, they literally just went to the river trying to wash their clothes, not knowing what danger is waiting for them in the river itself. So what happened is, while she was busy washing clothes, after a while she was done, so she took her baby just to try and just bathe her in the river. But then when I say bathe in the river, it's not really that she's now diving the baby in the river.
Yeah.
You know, the river bend always protects us from going deeper where the water is, where somebody cannot swim. So it's just on the riverbank when she was just trying to, this is a normal thing for us people here in the Kavango region. You just sit by the river and then you start bathing and all that. So while she was doing this in the action, not knowing what danger was waiting for her, a crocodile came from nowhere. And I'm talking about this is Kamuchonga village where the incident recently happened in the Mukwe constituency. And the reports say that she was just there as normally because this is where they are used to go to and just to take a normal bath. But then while she was now busy bathing the infant into the river, the crocodile came out of Norway and then tried to take the baby from her hands as she was pulling the baby. So the fight now started between the mother and the predator. And then it's unfortunate that the reptile now dragged the infant into the river, leaving the mother with bite on her thigh and buttocks. And as we speak, she's still recovering in the Andara district hospital. It's really a sad incident. She was really, really fighting to get her baby out of the river, but also in the meantime, she couldn't because now the predator was just more stronger than herself. But then now her ending up having sores, it's even more painful as a mother to know you are still recovering from the pressure of losing a baby and also the sores that the crocodile have left you with. So it's just she's battling with too many things at the same time. Now, while speaking to the Mukwe constituency councillor, who is that Mambai, he also suggested that indeed maybe there should be ways on how people, when they are going to the river, should avoid going deep into the river. He suggested a way that I was also thinking about to say perhaps people must put a lot of stones into the river so that because crocodiles do not like stones. This is one of the things he said, which I also didn't know. So by the way, he said maybe, especially on the deep side where people know that the places where crocodiles come from, perhaps if they can just put stone and then they just use the part of the river, which is not deep, which is just on the side of the bank, perhaps maybe that will help the people from getting attacked. And he also suggested a way, perhaps maybe the Ministry of Environment, Agriculture should come forth just to see how they can look into, into the human wildlife complex so that they can at least provide more boreholes for people that are surrounded in these areas which are so, so prone to crocodiles attack.
That definitely could be something that they can explore because another report that I had we'd spoken about right here on the Reader News Analysis indicates that there's a lot of fees or a lot of amounts that people who then have encountered incidences alongside or injuries from wildlife, you know, animals get paid a lot of money, and that is costing obviously the government a lot of money instead of now always, you know how they say prevention is better than cure. If they were using that money to rather fence off maybe the river, I mean, authorities have been speaking to the people, right, to the community to say don't do this, and then I don't know. And sometimes I think we often, especially when you're in a situation where you need to provide for the children, you overlook safety, you know, you just want to get bread for the kids, for your family, and then that's where such incidences happen. But Anacleta, get into the figures and the report and numbers on this particular incident.
Now, before I even get to the numbers, we usually have a discussions with the regional council, just to say, maybe these incidents are happening because perhaps there's nothing that they are looking into economically. For instance, if they can start with crocodile farming, do people think there will still be more of the crocodile attacks, or it will reduce? And this was one of the ideas that was suggested in 2022 by the Mashari constituency councillor, because the constituency itself was more prone to crocodile attacks than any other constituency in the Kavango East. And I really thought that was really a good idea to say that perhaps we can, instead of us now looking for this crocodile every time and not get them, why not just harvest them and have a farm for this crocodile? That's also one of the things that the ministry should look at as well. So now let's just go back to what we are talking about. Apart from the animal attacks, drowning remains a major concern in both two regions. Also, the report indicates that between 2022 and 2021, the Kavango River alone claims the lives of 27 people, mostly young men and children. And in 2024, at least only 4 drowning cases were recorded in the Kavango East. And if we look at this, it's already an alarming thing to say, what are the leaders within the region doing about this? Or what are we as the ones that are now sending out the news there doing about it, to emphasize on the awareness of our own people, to say, at least if you do not know how to swim, please go to a swimming school or something like that, so that we don't see a lot of drowning cases in the area. It's sad to say that even in Rundu itself, we do not have such classes, but I bet in Windhoek there are classes that are conducted to say people go for swimming classes, but in Rundu there are just few activities that are really going on in this. Maybe that is also one of the things that leaders should also consider, because we know we live by the banks of the river, but many of us still find it hard to swim. But then when you are happy, all excited, you really want to go and just dive in the river, not knowing the dangers that can come in that situation that you're getting yourself into.
Mm-hmm. You know, for the Oshivambo culture, let me not say culture, but for the Oshivambo people, children normally, when they go to, is it like a dam sort of? Not necessarily a river, but yeah, maybe those perennial rivers that they will go to. Mm-hmm. Not so,
like a canal?
Yeah, sort of something like that. And they usually get very disciplined for that, so they get spanking for that, just to discourage many of them from doing so. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many of them don't know how to swim. But then again, it has been a very good thing, because it has helped reduce the number of incidences of those who are going to drown because of that. Of course, there are some incidences that do take place, but then again, it's significantly reduced. Maybe measures also need to be taken by the people themselves, by the community themselves, to say, you know what, if we do find people actually swimming here, they will be into trouble. Because such incidences, at one point, you know, dramatic steps need to be taken, because how do we continuously lose so many lives to drowning, to crocodiles, to, you know, all that kind of stuff, instead of embracing what nature has given us? Rather, now you're becoming victim of it, which is not supposed to be like that.
And also one thing is, most of these drowning cases have been published in different newspapers, and a lot of people read about it. But then what I do not understand is perhaps the awareness is perhaps just too little to reach out to everybody out there, because you find that the region itself is very, very big compared to other regions. Now we talk about Rundu being the second populated region, town. So you can already see that numerous people are migrating from other towns or maybe other regions just to come and stay in river. But still, I know we have the river, but there are just some certain things, like you said, we need to be alert to everything that we do. And more, I feel sometimes that maybe more awareness should be run, not only in schools, but also in public. Like, for instance, you call out a certain a certain location to say, no, this day and this day, we are going to have a talk about what causes drowning and how does a person drown. And maybe it can also be an advert on television where people should also talk about why is the high number of drowning. Just for us to, you know, to run awareness. You know, previously we all knew when we were in school, I still remember Don't Touch It, Report It, when we were taught about why you should not touch a bomb. Mm-hmm. Up to now, I still have it in my mind because I remember the way the campaign was a brilliant one. And we used to get rulers, we used to get pens, we used to get t-shirts, and a lot of things. And we loved it. And we grew up knowing that it's not good when you see something that looks dangerous for you to dig it out. Perhaps maybe also these type of things must be
reintroduced
so that people can be aware, and more campaigns and awareness should be set so that people should be really, really aware and also know that really if I have to go, knowing that I can't even swim, it's not going to be good for me. So the best way for me is just maybe to sit on the bench and watch others swimming. But I'm just saying, I'm not saying that everybody cannot swim, but then life is more precious than just you going in the river drowning, knowing that you cannot swim. And also police reported and say that most of the investigations which they did, most of these incidents revealed that some victims are attending to cross the river coming from Namibian side, going to the Angolan side, while under the influence of alcohol. Come on, why would one really want to do this?
You see, no.
Okay, I know some. There have been a lot of incidents when people go and party at the river, but yeah, we should really, really look out to our people that, okay, if you, Maria, you know you cannot swim, so I know we are happy and all that, but remember, you are not going to go in the river. It's obvious. While you are under the influence of alcohol, you'll be seeing things that you cannot see, especially when it comes to the river. So perhaps another warning is that we should always stay away from the river when we are under the influence of alcohol.
Mm-hmm. And avoid anything that is obviously going to put you in a position where you either lose your one of your limbs or you lose your life. But I agree with you about those campaigns. They definitely need to be done. But nonetheless, Anacleta, thank you so much for making time for us right here on All the Reading News Analysis. I sure hope that this conversation alone has reached the masses in Kavango, East Kavango, West, and parents will also take it seriously. And another worst part is that it's not just children that are actually drowning in, you know, it's also adults themselves. So let's just hope that community will also spread word by word and just to help combat the situation.
Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay. And there you had it from our reporter, Anacleta Haikera. Now, apart from any more attacks, drowning, as she said, remains a major concern in the two regions. Our reports indicate that between 2020 and 2021, the Kavango River alone claimed the lives of 27 people, mostly young men and children. In 2024, at least 4 drowning cases were recorded in Kavango East. And despite repeated public warnings from local authorities and the police, many residents continue to depend on the river for daily activities such as bathing, fishing, and washing clothes, exposing themselves to danger. Environmental and safety experts have called for urgent measures, as you have heard Anacleta also speak about some of these measures that she herself has been thinking about, which include the installation of warning signs along dangerous river sections, community education campaigns, and the provision of safer water access points in order to reduce fatalities. Now, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with more news. Stay tuned right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor. This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoewe ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Akupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka akukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge fata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko derewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba.
Welcome back. Did you know the University of Namibia Alumni Association is hosting its elective annual general meeting on the 5th of November this year? Now, nominations are now open and will be closing on the 13th of October 2025. All fully paid up alumni members are eligible to be nominated. Now, to qualify, a fellow alumni must nominate you and your nomination must be seconded by two paid up alumni members of the association. To submit your nomination form, visit the Alumni tab on the UNAM website and click on Alumni AGM nomination. Don't miss your chance to lead. In other news, Zimbabwe's economy is showing strong signs of recovery following years of instability, with major international universities, including the international institutions, including the International Monetary Fund, IMF, and World Bank, commending the country's recent reforms and policy efforts. Now, after a difficult 2024 marked by droughts and economic shocks, Zimbabwe is projected to achieve 6% growth in 2025, with the latest forecast raising that figure to 6.6%. Now, the upward revision comes on the back of a robust tobacco harvest, improved rainfall, and strong global gold prices, key contributors to the country's recovery momentum. Now, joining me in studio to discuss furthermore in in-depth to understand it better is economist Joseph Shihama. A very good afternoon to you, Joseph Shihama, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Good afternoon, Zuzu. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Now, Joseph, isn't this good news now that we are hearing that Zimbabwe's economy is showing strong signs of recovery? You know, Zimbabwe was that country that I think even a 15-year-old knew that their economy was doing really bad. So, yeah, but get into it. Just explain more in detail what could have contributed and what are perhaps those decisions that the leaders had to make or those on the ground had to make for this recovery.
That is actually one thing is a wow, and really congratulations to our neighbor countries, and especially looking at their leaders, and then also really if you look at in the difficult time that they went through and or they experienced, you look at across almost like Africa, there are people, they are scattered almost everywhere. But today we have a country which projected to reach a 6% increase in economic activity. That is actually a wow. I think that one of the best things that Zimbabwe has done is that they have focused, because I was talking to one of my good friends from Zimbabwe, who is also economist, and they focus more on the debt resolution, so meaning that they actually engage or re-engage with their creditors or with the other banks that they are, that Zimbabwe is actually owing. And also what I did is that they have implemented mental policy. What happened there is the plan was actually to reduce the inflation. And you will recall that that inflation was very high. And in some cases, it was even hard inflation. They have also started to control what we call it the fiscal reform.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we have seen that there is a better fostering of investors' confidence. I think it was last year, where the president of Zimbabwe have actually invited our brothers, let me say, the white communities, just to come and also help the country. And that is a very, very good thing, because you are fostering that confidence in investors. And also the good thing is that what I see that the good governance in Zimbabwe start also to pay off, which is a very, very good thing.
Yeah. Now, in terms of agriculture, obviously has been a driving sector towards recovery. Just what are those particular things that you think they are doing that helped improve, and that maybe you can connect Namibia to Zimbabwe in this aspect?
If you look at, I can remember, I think it was 2019, 17, when I was in Zimbabwe, and you see, Zimbabwe is in agriculture. It's actually they are very good. And I think it was just a matter of political instabilities. So, but if you look into 2024, so we have seen that they have started coming up. But now, looking at the first half of 2025, wow, here is them. So, and that they've actually decided to reinvest or to revive the agriculture, or maybe they have introduced some of high tech equipment in agriculture, and also what I think is that what I did, from one person that taught me, they have also started to invest more in a tourism industry, and also the other thing is that it's a sort of like they have decided to diversify in all the potential or the most important economic sectors, and also coming to Namibia, and that is why I think that Namibia is actually driving to that, where Namibia was talking about diversification, because you know that I think 2024-2025 was not a good year for Namibia in terms of mining and so on.
Uh-huh.
And also the other thing that what Zimbabwe does, I think last year, 2024, I think is when they start to try it, or the currency to be backed by the gold.
Uh-huh.
And obviously we're so lucky or blessed that the gold price just start to rise up, and from there they have actually make a very, very good revenue, and that is a kind of example that Namibia also need to take. So we must not be ashamed, just to go to Zimbabwe and say, look, you people, you were there, everyone was actually laughing at you, were like a laughing stock, and everyone, when people talk about Zimbabwe, is like a, sometimes they say, oh, Namibia will become like a Zimbabwe and so on. So for us, we also need to go there, especially look at agriculture, for instance, and also to go and learn some of technical. And there's nothing wrong to go and learn from your neighbor and come and apply. And I can tell you, if you look at in most of the agricultural sectors in Namibia, most of those managers, they are actually from our neighboring countries like Zimbabwe and so on. And that is a technical that we can learn from them.
Mm-hmm. Now you speak about Zimbabwe's gold-backed currency aimed at curbing inflation and restoring confidence in the local financial system. But now, while the gold has helped stabilize the economy, public trust and widespread adoption remains limited, with many citizens still relying on foreign currencies, particularly the US dollar, for daily transactions. Just how do you think perhaps they could also help their economy by not heavily depending on gold?
What I think is that, the community, or let me say, so it is very difficult for them when it's a sort of like, so should we trust our finance, I mean our currency, especially now when Zimbabwe introduced what we call it the gold-based digital token, or what we call it ZIZ. So, what the authority in Zimbabwe need to do is just now to start now to engage, especially like the, all the Zimbabweans, whether they are in Zimbabwe or whether they are scattered around.
Mm.
And also just to start, to show them that look, our country has started to perform. So we need also to believe and also to have a confidence in our currency. So it's about fostering and that positive communication and engaging all the grassroots, it is everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it is a collective success that the country is going to have.
Mm. Interesting. Just I have spoken to a Zimbabwe national who also sees that, they are seeing the tangible results, or perhaps possible. But for you as an economist, when do you think ordinary Zimbabweans in Zimbabwe will start to feel the economic recovery of Zimbabwe? How long between perhaps translating between what IMF is saying and tangible results on ground?
Yes. Okay. One thing that we also need to think about is that when we talk about economic growth or the country registered a positive growth over that specific period, in some cases is not actually attainable by for the time being. So because if you look at, for instance, if you go to Namibia, so the inflation dropped. But you're not feeling it in your pocket.
No.
So yeah. So meaning that all the good commodities, the price is very high. So you will not feel it immediately. So but in the long term, you might feel it. So and now what the authorities need to do is just a matter of communicating, and also what is most important is that. And also to start maybe to call their people and say, okay, we come up with a certain fund, just like as Namibia did, so that, maybe you can, like a small business, you can apply certain funds and also then they start to export, you see. So because they are good in agriculture and they have got a talent, that must not make a mistake. They got a talent.
Mm.
They can actually become the hub of agricultural, especially like in the Sadc region.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's so unfortunate that now that I think about it that, you know how very hardworking Zimbabweans really are, and that to have their economy, working against them. But of course, now we're talking about good news to recovery, but just in general itself to, you're very hardworking, but then the economy is really working hard against you. It's something that it puts you in a position that is really, unreasonable. Should I put it like that? But yeah, we can only hope for the best for them. Really.
No, it's true. When I read the news, or especially yesterday when I heard it, I was a little bit emotional, and I look at our brothers from Zim who are scattered in Namibia, whatever they are selling and so on, and some of these people, they are qualified teachers, nurses, engineers, and some of them today extend some of them, they have a doctorate and so on. Mm. And now, here's good news. I know that it will also be more emotional to them. Mm-hmm. But what I want to advise is it's just to start to embrace that new and also know that yes, that it was only political instabilities that was caused that and also economic embargo. So when there was because remember the Zim, there was sanctions against Zimbabwe, and that affects also the economy. And also the nation needs to understand that now we can see that there's light at the end of the tunnel, which we are actually seeing it now. So it's a matter of that, okay? Let me also bring my side now. I'm a professional person. Then obviously they will start to rebuild the countries. And I can guarantee you they can. And even they classify as a lower income group right now. I won't be surprised. If next year or 2 years from now that Zimbabwe is upper middle income. So I will not surprise. Mm. And I know they can. They can. They have that. They got the talent, and I know they can.
Yeah, and especially now that there's political stability.
Yes, they can.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know what, Joseph Sharma, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis. I do appreciate your insight with us right here.
Okay, Ndava.
Okay.
Thank you for having me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
And of course, there you had it from economist Joseph Shehama, just educating us on Zimbabwe's way to recovery from a six, which is projected to be at 6% growth in this 2025. And other focus are also rising the figure to 6.6%. I've also reached out to a Zimbabwean national who is staying right here in Namibia, that is Tobias. Let's take a listen to him in regards to this particular news of Zimbabwe's recovering economy. And now we're joined in studio by Tobias Mutlanga. Very good afternoon, Tobias, and welcome to On The Reading News Analysis.
Yeah, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Now, Tobias, of course, Zimbabwe's economy is said to be recovering. What do you have to say about this? Would you say it definitely is recovering? Are there changes compared to earlier years and how people were struggling financially and of course, the economy? Would you say there are changes?
Yeah, yes, Zimbabwe is changing both. Something is improved from there, from backwards, but now it's changing the economy and the job. Now people, they are getting jobs and the companies, they are opening. But the problem, only the problem is current, the money they are using, but a lot of things are changing.
Mm. Now, in terms of the money that you speak about and jobs now being accessible to people, was it just jobs, informal jobs, or even for those who have degrees and are well educated, were struggling to find jobs compared to now?
Yeah, yes, those are the ones they are having degrees, they are getting also jobs. Companies, some companies like those mining and what, some of people they go and they apply the job and they are called to be working the company.
Mm. Now, speaking about the currency, what challenges do you think currently Zimbabwe faces because of their currency?
Yeah, currency is the issue from Zimbabwe. That's why some visitors to come there to open their companies and to come to Zimbabwe because of the current. The current is the one is not working. It's not power. It doesn't have power to buy something there in Zimbabwe.
Okay. Well, what is it that you would like to expect from the leaders, Zimbabwean leaders, of course, in terms of the economy going forward and not just go backwards in future years, but rather to keep on growing and expanding? What is it that you would want the leaders to focus on majorly now?
Yeah, I need the leaders to be consider about the current. If they are fixing the current, that long time, those Zimbabwean dollar, if those Zimbabwean dollar are coming to work in Zimbabwe, I think Zimbabwe will becoming better. It's becoming okay, not better. It's becoming fine, total fine, 100%.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? Zimbabwe receives really good rain. So agriculturally, the economy could really boost into this, in this line. But do you think a lot of Zimbabweans are really taking this into account? Maybe for them to grow their farms and, produce even beyond the borders of Zimbabwe?
Come again, I didn't hear the question.
In terms of agriculture, do you think Zimbabweans are making use of this aspect to grow their farms and be able to produce produce that can even go beyond the borders of Zimbabwe itself?
Yeah, definitely. Because Zimbabwe is getting rain, and even the soil matter, the soil, to planting something,
yeah.
Zimbabwe is very good about those agriculture things, even to if they are plowing and those things are gonna send them to cross the border. Because in Zimbabwe, when there's rain, there's so much soil matter, it's fine to plowing. So Zimbabwe is good about agriculture.
Mm.
Yeah.
A lot of Zimbabweans have also migrated to other countries in order to find good pasture and be able to survive and help their family. Do you think perhaps a lot of Zimbabweans at this time might be considering going back home, or perhaps maybe those who are still in Zimbabwe were thinking maybe of moving out? Do you think now that the economy is improving, they could now stay back home as things might get better? Or what do you think?
Definitely. Home is best. Home is best. As long Zimbabwe is fine, all those Zimbabwean, the foreigner, they went to another country, they'll go back. Because as long people we are outside the country, we are not feeling free.
Yeah.
But if the economy is good, totally 100%, I don't think the Zimbabwean will stay to another country.
Mm-hmm. Especially with challenges that come with being in another country, hey?
Yeah, especially the challenges.
Okay, Tobias, thank you so much. But overall, what else would you want to say in regards to this particular news that we are tackling now?
It's only good that the leaders, they must only fix the current. They need to fix only those issues. If they fix those issues, I think everybody will be happy. Everybody will be happy in his country. You know, Africa is a good country.
Yeah.
Africa is a good, but the leaders, they need to fix those things, the problem. Even our kids, they need also to feel that they are in their country. So not saying it our kids, they say, us we are crying about this, you born like this, now you are grown up like this, now our kids they are crying also in same thing. I don't think it would be good like that. Well, Zimbabwe now it's let me Africa, it's a boom. It's a boom.
Yeah.
Whatever the things you want in Africa, you get. Especially in Zimbabwe, there's a lot of mines, there's a lot of diamonds, there's a lot of everything is there. Everything is there.
Yeah.
The government, they need to see that. I know they have also people. They have also people. They need to survive in this country.
That's true. Tobias, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Eagle FM, let's you express your...
And they had it from Topias. Now, a major driver of this rebound is Zimbabwe's agricultural sector, which has recovered strongly following the devastating El Nino-related drought. Improved weather conditions have boosted the production of staple crops such as maize and tobacco, providing vital support to both employment and food security. While on the fiscal side, government efforts to tighten spending and improve revenue collection have also gained international praise. Adjustments to value-added tax VAT, new taxation measures, and the reduction of exemptions have increased revenue as a share of gross domestic product. Now, at the same time, a greater control of quasi-fiscal operations by shifting off budget activities from the central bank to treasury has enhanced transparency and financial discipline. Now, obviously, a key part of Zimbabwe's stabilization effort has been the introduction of the zinc, which is also known as Zimbabwe gold, as economist Joseph Sharma alluded to us earlier. Now, a gold-backed currency aimed at curbing inflation and restoring confidence in the local financial system. Now, since its rollout, the ZIC has contributed to a notable reduction in inflation while narrowing the gap between financial and parallel exchange rates. Also, the IMF, in its latest Article 5 report, uploaded Zimbabwe's progress in restoring macroeconomic stability and curbing inflation. Now, the World Bank has expressed optimism about the country's outlook for 2025, citing strong performance in agriculture, industry, and services. In addition, the World Bank has pledged to provide financial support in order to stimulate growth and reduce poverty, provided Zimbabwe continues implementing structural reforms and clears its external areas. Now, despite the progress, analysts caution Zimbabwe's recovery remains fragile. Rising public sector wage bills, drought relief costs, and infrastructure spending are putting pressure on the national budget. Now, heavy debt servicing, including long-standing obligations of the central bank and state-owned enterprises, continue to weigh on fiscal stability. While the ZIC has helped stabilize the currency, public trust and widespread adoption remain limited, with many citizens still relying on foreign currencies, of course, one of them being particularly the US dollar for their daily transactions. Economists also warn that the economy's heavy dependency on commodity exports, such as gold, leaves it exposed to fluctuations in global prices. Similarly, agricultural gains could easily be reversed by future climate shocks or droughts, underscoring the need for climate resilient farming practices. International observers are urging Zimbabwe to maintain fiscal discipline, strengthen transparency in public institutions, and pursue debt restructuring to restore its access to global credit markets. They also emphasize the importance of promoting broader acceptance of the zinc reduction of the dollar and investing in climate smart agriculture in order to safeguard long-term growth. Now, as Zimbabwe works to rebuild trust in its currency, as you heard Tobias mention on particularly the part of currency a lot, as well as attract foreign investment and diversify its economy, the current optimism signals a step forward, but one that must be backed up by sustained policy reform, transparency and resilience in order to ensure that lasting economic stability. Of course, let's now pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is On the Reading News Analysis. Should you want to contribute and air opinions and ask questions on the news that we covered this day, 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Let's pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace, and we'll be back. So I tell you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators. Stay tuned.
Lipura nenge no wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshuana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarude kayo loka opone ushendike nawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa ninge Pada Fanona, Monica Ko, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Heari, Nola Natu, Heari Bali No Heari, Ileko Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Batatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, The Eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Dierre, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-0063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite okoywe.
And now for economic indicators. $1 dollar today is equals to 17 Namibian dollars and 17 cents, and £1 sterling is equals to 23 Namibian dollars and 02 cents. €1 is equals to 19 Namibian dollars and 97 cents. $1 Australian is equals to 11 Namibian dollars and 29 cents. $1 Swiss franc is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 47 cents. $1 Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 29 cents. Now let's move over to trading economics. U.S. stock futures traded higher on Wednesday, with contracts on the three major indexes up about 0.2%, rebounding from the previous session's losses that ended the S&P 500's seven-session winning streak. Now, investors largely shrugged off concerns over the government shutdown and turned their attention to corporate developments. Focus is also on the FOMC minutes due later in the day, which could offer fresh insights into the outlook for interest rates. In pre-market trading, Tesla gained 0.6% after plunging 4.5% on Tuesday, following the launch of new Model 3 and Model Y versions priced below $40,000 in the US. The economy of Cape Verde expanded by 6.2% year-on-year in the second quarter of 2025, accelerating from a 3.7% rise in the previous period. The key sectors driving growth included construction at 23.2% versus 15.7% in the first quarter, mining at 25.2% versus 20.1%, now fisheries at 20.5% versus minus 17.9%, transport at 7.9% versus 6.3%, accommodation and food services, public administration and business services. Additionally, net taxes on products after subsidies increased 8.3% in the second quarter, adding 1.3 percentage points to the total GDP growth. Now that's what we have for you today in terms of economic indicators. We pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace. When we return, we'll tell you what's making headline in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite okoywe ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi kayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatimwe bali heari nola natu heari bali no heari. Ile ko berewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.5. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of.
Welcome back now for news beyond the borders. We're starting off in South Africa, moving on to other regional places and then continental news and international news right after that. Now, South Africans are very excited about the global Somod Frontila activist retained back home.
To return home are scheduled to return home at about 9:30 this morning after attempting to establish a human corridor to break the siege of Gaza and being imprisoned by Israel.
And then, as we've been saying, it's an interesting one. They, of course, were released to Jordan. They're making their way home. They're just about to touch down. That flight is on schedule.
Yeah.
And, of course, we have our team out at the O.R. Tambo International Airport ready and waiting. And you saw them this morning, Griselda Lewis, Kylie Lekumalo, Sophie Mukwena also there. And they will be keeping you abreast of development.
In fact, let's hand it to them right now as they bring us to the end of Morning Live. We're going to say goodbye to you so that we can give them more time. And we look forward to seeing you bright and early tomorrow morning. Have a great day.
Well, thank you very much to you both, Sakina, as well as Leanne. And as we reported a bit earlier on, we were expecting a number of activists to arrive here at O.R. Tambo International Airport. Solidarity activists, of course, waiting for that flight to land here at O.R. at about 9:30 this morning. Let's just take a look at one of the placards here. I'm going to ask my colleague Kwazimanzi just to show you this one placard that says here, send Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi's team to Israel. Quite ironic that, we have this placard here. You would know, of course, that the second day of the appearance of the KwaZulu-Natal Police Commissioner, Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi, of course, starting at 9 o'clock at the ad hoc committee, a second day of him, of course, talking about the allegations that he had made earlier relating to interference within the criminal justice system. So I found that quite ironic that we have one of these placards which says, send Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi's team to Israel. One of the others that we see here is children deserve love, not bombs. Of course, you would know that this global Somod Flotilla had been trying to get humanitarian aid into Gaza. This, of course, being medical supplies as well as food due to the humanitarian crisis there. Let's bring in some of these activists now that are here at O.R. Tambo International Airport. Sir, thank you very much for your time this morning. A very interesting placard. I guess you're calling for more to be done in order to resolve the situation in Gaza and to stop the ongoing war that is ravaging.
That's correct. Why we chose the Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi placard is because, like him, he's fighting against a group of group that is just above the law, and same to Israel. They like go on like they're above the law, and whatever the law says, they go against it. And I think he took the stand against it to show that one person can make a difference. And I think with the flotilla showing the same thing, that even though they managed to intercept their ships, the people still of Gaza managed to get food in a different way, and humanitarian aid still got to them eventually in different ways and forms. So exactly as that, we're hoping that the same result comes from the flotillas and whatever everybody's taking their sacrifice to do to get humanitarian aid to Gaza. We hope the same gets there in the same way that Mkhwanazi is trying to get justice for the country of South Africa.
All right, quite a juxtaposition there. Thank you very much, sir. I see the whole family is here. Wife and children woke up very early this morning. Why was it important for you to come here and show solidarity, ma'am?
It was very important for us, as we strongly believe that this is a genocide. We want to show our support. I mean, us as civilians, there's not much we can do, but just to show our support and spread the word. Mm.
All right, thank you very much indeed. Some of the activists, some of the first to arrive here at Oar Tambo International Airport, just a couple of moments, I guess just a little over a half an hour to that aircraft expected to land from Qatar here at Oar Tambo International Airport. I can certainly tell you there has been quite a lot of support here at the airport in anticipation for the arrival of the South African, the six South African activists were on that global Sumud flotilla trying to get humanitarian aid to Gaza. Well, that's where we're going to have to leave.
Let's cross borders now over to Zambia, where Zambia is set to benefit from €1.5 million fund for ecosystem restoration and pollution control.
Over time, Southern Africa has experienced effects of climate change, including drying rivers, shrinking forests, and frequent floods. Human activities like deforestation, mining, and poor waste management continue to damage the environment. But hope is rising. Reversing Environmental Degradation in Africa and Asia, RIDA, has released £1.5 million to support climate action in Zambia, Malawi, and Zimbabwe through Slum Dwellers International.
So this project aims to bring together, you know, the local communities to define priorities in terms of what needs to be done in terms of ecosystem. How do we restore the ecosystem? How do we speak to climate change issues, and how do we address them based on locally led priorities?
In Zambia, the focus is on restoring the ecosystem in Chongwe and Kafue rivers.
Because ya contaminated water na vintu vambili vamine vachitikamo mitengo bantu bajuba ma farmers yanapaka manzi so siya enda kutali yasira mchaka chikali becha sira
Kafue river kuno moku yale afu abantu sana abantu bale no amwamenshi bale sta water gardens bale ikata mwesa bi but pali inoshita ifyo fyonse tafita shani tafichitika.
In Malawi, communities in Lilongwe and Mzuzu are working to restore degraded land.
The sand minings, the brick making, and the illegal dump sites, and the bare grounds as well, that the trees were cut off carelessly.
And in Zimbabwe, efforts target illegal dump sites and the open pits in Bulawayo and Kadoma.
They are causing hazards to people's health. They are also causing some water pollution, because when the water passes through that, it goes to the clean water, to the streams, to the wells which people are using.
Over the next 4 years, the project aims to restore ecosystems and empower communities to fight climate change. Lucky Piri, ZNB.
Meanwhile, President Hakainde Hichilema has called for digital tools in order to accurately measure African economies.
The Global Assessment Architecture, which determines the size and strength of national economies, has for some time come under scrutiny, particularly from African leaders, who argue that it undervalues most economies on the continent. Speaking at the Digital Government Africa Summit in Chongwe District, President Hijilema called for the creation of digital platforms capable of accurately measuring Africa's true economic potential.
We need a platform that will accelerate our agenda for growth, for economic expansion, more investment, trade. The Africa Free Trade Area itself needs a digital revolution in order to have a chance of success. As you know, we are the continent that does least business with itself. That has to change. And it's the digital platforms, it's this conference, it's the work around what brings us here, the ancillary aspects to support the digital revolution, is what will make it possible for us to change the fortunes of Africa.
The president also said the current situation, where African countries trade less with one another, other than any other region of the world, can only change if the continent develops and owns its digital platforms. And President Hichilema further called for the adoption of a single African identification credential, which would allow Africans to move and trade freely across the continent.
A digital ID, Africa ID, digital ID, will restore our normal family ties. You take a journey from origination to your destination, everybody sees your ID. It will also help us fight criminality, illegal things, human trafficking, all of that stuff, which sometimes slows our agenda down because we focus on the negatives, colleagues.
President Hichilema further announced that Zambia will be fielding one of its citizens, Cassius Mwale, to contest for the position of Secretary General of the African Telecommunications Union, ATU.
We as Zambia announce his candidature for the Secretary Generalship at the 2026 ATU Abuja Conference. We are humbled to offer this citizen of ours to serve the ATU, which he knows quite well. He understands the importance of this organization to our continent's agenda.
And Executive Governor for Zamfara State of Nigeria, Dauda Lawal, said the success of delivering government services now depends on digital connectivity, the bridge between innovation and public service efficiency.
Africa's digital agenda must therefore be built on deliberate investment as well as cooperation. We must continue to expand broadband infrastructure, construct secure data centers, and strengthen the institutions that protect information integrity.
And Technology and Science Minister Felix Mutati said technology is at its best when it brings people together by creating bridges that connect, not disconnect, nations and communities.
Digital transformation is about creating the bridge to opportunity, to prosperity, and breaking the barriers down that disconnect us.
And Smart Zambia National Coordinator Percy Chinyama said the summit has provided a rare platform for officials from more than 26 countries to explore partnerships and develop cooperation in digital transformation.
If we use digitization as that tool that is going to ignore the borders and ignore the different cultural differences and bring us together, that is the essence of the DGA summit.
And Visa Vice President and Group Head for Africa, Aida Diara, praised President Hichilema for his visionary leadership in advancing digital inclusion and driving Africa's transformation agenda.
This initiative represents a significant milestone of Zambia's digital transformation agenda, empowering every Zambian citizen with secure, accessible, and efficient digital payment solutions.
Sharon Siame, ZNBC News, Chongwe.
Meanwhile, Eswatini receives 10 U.S. deported nationals in transit.
Eswatini has received 10 third country nationals deported from the United States. In a statement, the country's Department of Correctional Services confirmed the news, saying the latest arrivals are added to the five it received in July. On Sunday, the landlocked country, which is bordered by South Africa on all sides, announced that it was expecting to receive 11 deportees but did not give their nationalities. The statement further said the individuals would be kept in correctional facilities until they could be repatriated to their home countries, adding they were in good health and undergoing admission processes. Eswatini has not disclosed the terms of the deal with the Trump administration and is facing a lawsuit from local activists who doubt its legality. Well, for more on this, we earlier spoke to Sibisiso Dlamini, a journalist based in Mbambane, the most popular city in Eswatini. Let's take a listen.
The His Majesty's Correctional Services released a statement whether they're conforming to the public and assuring that they are kept in a secure facility. But as well, now this adds to a growing list, and there's an ongoing court case where NGOs and civil society are arguing that government hasn't been transparent enough with the agreement between our government and the US government. So this adds at that time, and I think only one of the previous batch has left, and he's Jamaican. So that's what is happening so far in Eswatini regarding that matter. I mean, to be honest, with the second batch, there still is that mixture of confusion and unease, but it's better than last time. I think with what has happened with Emaswati, seeing that other countries as well are getting into such an agreement, I mean, it's less of an uproar and public concern this time as compared to the first one. I mean, the first time everyone didn't know what was happening. Journalists had to run around the entire day. Even some politicians, members of parliament, didn't know. Some members of cabinet clearly went away from conversations they're having with different people. So this time around, people are still concerned, but it's starting to feel like a routine thing at this point. So government has repeatedly refuted reports by groups such as Human Rights Watch that have thrown figures claiming that Eswatini is being paid amounts. Government has insisted that there is no financial incentive. They've also assured the locals that there is no taxpayers' money. There is no Swazi taxpayer money that's being spent. So, according to government, the U.S. government is catering for all these deportees, and it comes at no financial incentive to government. But this, of course, is all unconfirmed. Nobody really knows what's happening. Those are just claims from government so far.
Meanwhile, Nigeria has postponed 5% petrol levy until January.
In Doki, northern Nigeria, 71-year-old Umaru Uhutoro is struggling to provide for his family of 12. Once able to afford premium rice for under $3, his household now survives on discarded grains sold cheaply at the markets. His wife's small peanut trade is hardly enough to keep food on the table or the children in school.
Before we could afford to buy the best rice grains, which sold between 3,000, 500 to 4,000. But look at what life has turned out to be. We can only afford a tin full of apapada at 1,500. Because some days I don't even get to work to do.
We can't afford to send the children to school. Even if I go looking for a loan from someone, I will not get. I am just managing our situation.
At the local market, trader Abdul Karim Zubiru sells what locals call apapata, or rejected rice. Grains once considered unfit for human consumption, often used for animal feed. Now families are buying them in large quantities.
We get this rejected rice from the milling machine. It's been separated. The color is much darker, and oftentimes it may have either been affected by insects or something else.
Despite inflation easing slightly at around 21% in July, food costs remain stubbornly high. The government has been forced to suspend its new tax law, a move which economists describe as necessary, warning that the proposed 5% fuel surcharge could slash disposable income even further.
About 65% of our income ordinarily is going to food, and upon that it's still not sufficient. So I think it's not a good idea to actually bring about it. Government is smart enough for them to say yes, It's not they're not the one that introduced it. They're not going to start it now, but we don't want it for now. Or they should bring it as low as 1%.
Nigeria's reliance on fuel as a revenue source has often come at the expense of households already struggling with high costs. While the suspension of the surcharge offers temporary relief, the bigger question is whether the government can design long-term policies that protect the poor while still raising revenue.
Despite the government's move to delay the new tax policy, critics say without clear alternatives, families like Umaru's will remain on the edge of survival. Kelechi Emekalam, CGTN Kano, Nigeria.
Basil Abio is the co-founder of Truva Intelligence, is joining us now from Nigeria's federal capital to explore the direction of tax policy in the country. Basil, thank you for your time this evening. So the president says, you know, he wants to raise Nigeria's tax to GDP ratio to around 18% by 2026. How will these three tax reform acts that go into effect in January enable Nigeria to hit that goal?
Thank you, Ramos, for the question. Very important to highlight that the current tax to GDP ratio in Nigeria is 13.5%, and this was after the recently concluded rebasing of Nigeria's economy, which I was on your platform to expatiate. So is it possible for it to be increased to 18% in 2026? It's really difficult to say, but yeah, the pros of the tax reforms, the acts themselves are very importantly broaden the tax base, so that already improves the number of the tax GDP to ratio almost immediately. There is a unification not only in administration but also in enforcement. There's also an automation of the process itself. Now, the cons, what are the core cons? Especially what the limitations to attaining that number would be. First and foremost, there has to be subnational coordination from the federal government. States have very, distorted tax administration. And with the unification, which one of the Tax Reform Act already does by the joint tax resource ministry and department that they're setting up, it remains to be seen whether that coordination will be smooth. And if it's not smooth and sailing, then it's going to be really difficult to prop up the numbers. Now, there's an additional context with Nigeria's economy that is very different from, say, the classical macroeconomic example. Nigeria's economy is very informal. In fact, according to recent statistics, 59% of Nigeria's GDP is the exact size of our informal economy. Now, that informality, there is a context with which you're going to have to apply when it comes to enforcing the new tax laws.
Right.
How many of the small businesses, how many of the artisans themselves even qualify to be taxable, you know? And if they do qualify to be taxable, because there are a number of sectors that do qualify for that, especially the artisanal mining, where if you're doing artisanal mining in critical minerals, you're definitely getting the monies, right? But then how does the administration itself, the tax administration, how are they able to read through those numbers if those numbers are not banked? Now, Nigeria has a ridiculously high number of unbanked people. We have 45% of our adult population that do not have any bank accounts whatsoever, do not have access to financial services. So how can you do surveillance when most of the surveillance for taxability by the new tax law is dependent on automated processes?
But just steering you away from the bankability question there for a moment, the fact of the matter is, at a much deeper level, right, the country's gone through some very painful adjustments. There's floating the Naira, there's dealing with the inflation spike from that, arguments around fuel subsidy removal. At the end of the day, it comes back down to whether or not citizens in the country actually trust that this administration has their best interests at heart, so that in the event that they're saying, look, we want to get a bit more cash out of you, but do we trust you to actually do the right thing with the money that we're giving you? That's the key issue, isn't it?
Yes, that's a key issue. Credibility is a key issue. Anyone who has read classic works by Jean-Jacques Rousseau, for instance, The Social Contract, you're supposed to pay taxes in exchange for services and good governance, right?
Yep.
In the context of Nigeria, that has not been the case in the last 60 years. So that's why we have one of the lowest tax to GDP ratio, especially for the size of our economy. And it's largely because public governance has been abysmal. The way that our taxpayer funds are being misused, misappropriated by those who are given the social trust to be able to govern us, that is the issue. There's also the issue about implementation, for instance. In Nigeria, there's a traditional practice of tax surveillance and tax administrators who use Bowling task forces to do the implementation for new tax laws. Now that there's a unification, now that there's a simplification of the tax code, now that there seems to be professionalization of the administration itself, it will now be dependent on if that professional body for surveillance is done in a way that doesn't, for instance, introduce new prices, for instance, because sometimes when you want to go to the tax bodies to file your taxes, if there's corruption in the process, which allows for price transmission, that can make people distrust the system. Secondly, if there's a tax...
Hong Kong solidifies its role as Asia's top offshore wealth hub.
Investors, they are always chasing after asset safety. Hong Kong practice common law under the one country, two system. In Hong Kong, our tax regime is simple, transparent, and with certainty. For any investors, this is, you know, the ideal place to place their investment.
Family offices have evolved far beyond succession planning. For those who may have a narrow understanding of what family offices do, what do we need to understand about today's landscape?
The family office is not just about the dollar sign. It's always about the family stories and the values that they carry, you know, behind the family names, and they want to preserve it and bring it beyond generations. And philanthropy, Hong Kong, you know, has been doing that for a long time as well. And on these, a lot of family, they delve very deep into that subject and done a lot of good deeds for the society. And the backdrop of family office is really tied close to our, you know, present economy and everyday life.
And there seems to be a growing focus on managing new money in the so-called new economy, wealth creation in things like AI and biotech. What opportunities are you seeing in those areas?
Enormous. We understand that the AI development, whether it's investors, whether it's user, whether it's the practitioners within the industry, we're all looking at that. Our nation, China, has been doing so well in many areas. We're actually leading in the global turf. Whether new money, old money, any type of money, they can't neglect, you know, that huge part of their portfolio.
And Hong Kong is on the cusp of becoming the world's largest offshore wealth management hub. How does Hong Kong's integration with the Chinese mainland factor into global investors' decisions to put their money here?
China being the second largest economy in the world, for any portfolio, they can't act like that. And then, you know, in the beginning, we talked about the legal system, one country, two system, the common law, and independent judiciary system. That provided the biggest assurance and faith for international investors coming to Hong Kong, knowing their personal safety as well as their asset safety remained, you know, intact. In 2024, we have an influx increment of over 81% of capital rushing to Hong Kong. And I have to reiterate, investors outside mainland accounted for over 55%, proving that Hong Kong is a true international financial hub.
Humanoid robots are stepping onto the front lines of China's energy sector. It's part of a broader push as authorities in China are trying to deepen the use of both LLMs and advanced robotics in key industries. CGTN's Wang Qianyu recently visited a power facility in Guangzhou to find out more.
At a power substation in southern China's Guangzhou, humanoid robots are taking over inspection duties. The robot was developed by a local robot maker, but the tech subsidiary of China Southern Power Grid has made modifications by itself, adding more sensors, enhanced hands, and greater AI computing power.
The robot functions like a monitor. It guards us from making mistakes, like entering the wrong section or carrying out a wrong operation.
The humanoid robots and robot dogs can inspect facilities independently. They can catch abnormalities through its cameras and thermal imaging sensor in rare environments that pose risks for human workers.
This equipment is 109 degrees Celsius. I'm just standing next to it. It feels pretty hot. I'm already sweating. I guess it's 40 degrees Celsius out here. So obviously it's not comfortable for human beings to stay here for long.
Accurate inspections help guarantee stable power supply to the nearby neighborhoods, shopping malls, and stadiums. While these humanoid robots and robot dogs are still in trial, automated and AI-powered inspection tools have already been widely deployed.
The demand for automated inspection actually started before the 2000s. Daily operations and inspections of transmission lines required workers to climb mountains and cross rivers. Doing this manually was extremely demanding, inefficient, and the inspection quality was often inconsistent.
Since then, China's Southern Power Grid has actively embraced automation and artificial intelligence to improve its inspection efficiency.
By around 2021, the power grids in Guangdong province have achieved fully automated drone inspections for all transmission lines, substations, and distribution networks.
The power sector is just one example of how China is integrating AI and robotics into various industries. In August 2025, the country's State Council issued an AI Plus action plan aiming to deeply integrate AI into various sectors spanning industry, governance, and consumption. Wang Tianyu, CGTN, Guangzhou in Guangdong Province.
Meanwhile, Tesla debuts affordable versions of models Y and 3.
Tesla revealed lower-cost versions of its best-selling Model Y SUV and Model 3 sedan on Tuesday, in a bid to put its falling sales in reverse. The electric vehicle maker said Tuesday the new SUV starts at just under $40,000, while the sedan starts at around $37,000. They're calling the new models standard versions, which have no auto steer, driver assistance, or rear passenger touchscreens. They'll also have less powerful acceleration than the current models, which Tesla is now calling premium. CEO Elon Musk has promised mass-market Teslas for years, but canceled plans last year to build an all-new car set at an even lower price point, $25,000. But then last October, he said they would be priced below what he called a key threshold of $30,000 once the U.S. EV tax credit was factored in. Last month, the tax credit ended, effectively raising prices. That's what helped send Tesla's deliveries to the record levels it announced last week. But now, unless these cheaper models come to the rescue, it's expected sales will slow down for the rest of the year. Affordable cars like the standard models will be key to Tesla delivering 20 million vehicles over the next decade. That's one of several goals set by the company's board as part of its proposed $1 trillion pay package for Musk.
So, the end of Doge.
And with that being said, we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. To stay tuned for the Onko Nana Dengi program brought to you by Matthias Hangara. From Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful Wednesday afternoon.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite okoye ekukurile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala unongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune uto otukwetira o special ngeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge Pada fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatimwe bali heavy nola natu heavy bali no heavy ileko derewa bora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually
to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.